Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Pedro de Alcantara, who is an Alexander Technique teacher who lives primarily in Paris, France, but teaches in New York City and at other locations in the U.S. on a regular basis, and in fact teaches at locations around the world giving workshops. Pedro is, I think, best known in the Alexander world as someone who's specialized to a large extent in working with musicians, and he has written a pretty well-known Alexander Technique book called Indirect Procedures, A Musician's Guide to the Alexander Technique. He's also written a more general Alexander Technique book called The Alexander Technique, A Skill for Life. And he has a new book coming out in early 2011 that we're going to talk about briefly towards the end of this interview. He also is a cello player, a cellist, and he has also written some fiction, some poems, short stories, and novels for young readers. Pedro has been a teacher of the Alexander Technique for about 25 years now. Pedro, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert. Thanks for having me on your show.
Pedro, could you begin by giving our listeners a short description or definition of the Alexander Technique?
I think most Alexander teachers would tell you that it's a little bit difficult to define the Alexander Technique because it's so rich, but here's one version of the definition. I think the Alexander Technique is a way for you to solve a problem by putting the problem aside and working on yourself instead. Focusing on yourself, centering yourself, calming down, opening up your mind, and if you really do all of that, most problems tend to disappear. That's why I titled my book for musicians Indirect Procedures, because when you're trying to solve a problem, instead of doing it directly, you go in this indirect way where the problem is less important than your own thoughts and your own actions. And by clarifying your thoughts and your actions, the problem will dissipate or disappear. So here's my brief definition of the Alexander Technique.
So The technique is pretty well known among musicians, I would say. Probably
that's right.
More, I'm kind of guessing more among musicians than maybe other kinds of performers. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. Since Alexander himself was an actor and he worked with so many people in the theater, but I think you are right that more musicians than actors know the Alexander Technique. I'm sure there are many different reasons for it, but I think one of them is that a musician who takes an Alexander lesson, and if the lesson goes well, the musician will immediately hear a difference in his music making or singing. So there's a kind of a very immediate test where you can tell that you will sound better if you do certain things that the Alexander Technique is inviting you to do. So I think this immediacy of results is probably one of the reasons why musicians have recognized the technique for so long.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps often, not always, but often an immediacy of pain relief, if that's the issue that the musician is concerned with.
I think that's part of it as well. Although, strictly speaking, you don't need to have any pain whatsoever to study the Alexander Technique. And I myself, when I took my first Alexander lesson at the instigation of my cello teacher in college, I didn't have any pain. I was just an awkward player. My teacher saw that and suggested that I take lessons. At the time, he himself was taking Alexander lessons. So I think pain is not a requirement to study the Alexander technique.
Oh, absolutely not. No. But I think, in fact, a very high proportion of certainly professional musicians play in pain at least part of the time. And To me, from I'm not a musician at all, but it does strike me that it is an incredibly demanding profession, just on a physical level, apart from everything else.
I think that's true, and the demands, I think there are a lot of different demands, quite apart from the coordination of finding a good way to be coordinated, the instrument. I think when you make music, you're doing something that essentially is very, very big. Music is a kind of a path to the divine, and making music, it's demanding from this sort of psychophysical and metaphysical point of view. And it can be a big struggle to face the divine and not know how to react. And I think musicians, knowingly or unknowingly, are trying to do something very big and deep. And it's very, very demanding. And then you have the professional demands, the rehearsals and the group dynamics and the tours and the lousy pay and the, yeah, it's a very difficult profession. You can say that.
Uncomfortable chairs and music sharing music stands, or which I first learned about a few years ago.
That's right. If you play in an orchestra, usually, if, with a few exceptions, you'll be sharing a music stand with somebody else, and the stage will be quite crowded. And if you're playing in an opera orchestra, you're going to be in a pit that's not only crowded but dark and damp as well. So it's true that the physicality of music making can be uncomfortable, but that doesn't change the fact that if you have the absolute ideal chair and the best lighting and the best concert hall, it is still very difficult to make music and to do it well. So the good chairs are only part of it, I think.
Right. So, for a musician, I'm trying to put myself in place of a musician listening to this and wondering, okay, I certainly can identify with those stressors in my professional life. How is the what might I expect if I did call up an Alexander Technique teacher such as yourself? What might I expect to happen when I came for a lesson?
I think it's useful to think of the Alexander Technique as a vast universe, peopled by several thousand teachers, 4, 5, 6 thousand teachers all over the world. And within that universe, there are a lot of different ways of working. I don't think there's a standard lesson or even a standard school of teaching. But suppose somebody comes to me. People will come with many different motivations, and I think the first difficulty is for you to understand yourself better. I think oftentimes people have a feeling about what their problem may be, but oftentimes the problem lies elsewhere. Suppose you have tendinitis in the wrist, and that's the trigger for you to take a first lesson. Most likely that tendinitis is only a symptom of a larger picture regarding how you play or how you move or how you react to the conductor or how you look at a score and it's full of black notes and you're nervous about not being able to play all the notes. So there are a lot of elements beyond your wrist. So I think the very first duty of an Alexander teacher is to help you let go of fixed ideas about what your problems may be and get you to step back a little bit and look at the larger picture and start noticing things that you do habitually that you're not aware of. So probably in a first lesson, I would put you into a number of situations, some of them very simple. You sit, you stand, you say something. Some a little bit more demanding. I might take you off balance and see how you react. And you can react either by freaking out or calming down. And I think you will see that I'm talking to an imaginary musician, that in many situations you freak out a little bit, and sometimes you don't know that you're freaking out. You think it's normal to react the way you're doing it. And if you stop freaking out, you can think much more constructively about your life or about the problem, or about your wrist, or about the score, or about the conductor, or about the profession. So I think that's what I do in the first lesson is just help you find a little distance from your problem and take a sort of playful, constructive attitude to the situation.
And then, as lessons proceed, maybe just say a word or two about the the teaching process over a longer period of time?
It's so highly variable. I've had some students who took intermittent lessons over 18 or 19 years with me. Now, I'm not saying that a musician must do that. What I'm saying is that in 19 years, you can do a tremendous amount of different things. It depends a lot on the musician. There are some musicians who at first need to take some time off from making music within the lesson. You just do a non-music lesson just to figure out where your neck is and where your pelvis is and if the neck's talking to the pelvis or not, and how you balance yourself in movement and how you respond to the situation of the lesson. And then perhaps at some point you will play for me. And usually I like giving choices to my students. For instance, you play for me, and then I tell you something like this. I give you two choices. You can talk to me about what you just did, or I can talk to you about what I observed. And what's very interesting is that making choices can be very difficult. Sometimes people are a little bit nervous, but to become able to make a choice without leaking out a lot of psychic energy is very useful. So the student might say, "All right, you can tell me something about it." And oftentimes, what I try to do is to organize the feedback along three main lines: things about coordination, everything having to do with the head, neck, back, and legs, movement, tension, posture, and stuff like that. Then the second line of thinking is rhythm, because that's the main state of music making. You cannot coordinate yourself well if you don't have a good sense of rhythm, so it's always good to make a study of it. And the third thing is sound, vibration, oscillation, everything that the musician is making regarding sound. And those three things, coordination, rhythm, and sound, together give a very, very good picture of what the musician's doing. So I would give some feedback regarding those aspects, depending on what I see. And then propose exercise and procedures and tools and exercise and meditations.
So, I'd like to, before we finish the podcast, talk a little about your new book that's coming out. But before we do that, is there anything more generally that you would like to talk about before we get to your new book?
I think in terms of the Alexander technique, it's really very useful to refer back to Alexander's first and main idea as reflected on the title of his book, The Use of the Self. And the self is the whole person, body and mind, soul, heart, thinking, your history, your desires, your wishes. And Alexander thought that the most important thing in life is how you react to situations with the whole of yourself. So I think for everybody who studies the technique or who has a problem or would like to solve a problem, to embrace the idea that you bring the whole of yourself to everything that you do is very useful. It can be daunting at first, but if you really do it, it means that you will solve a lot of problems in one go, because by coordinating the whole of yourself, many symptomatic problems disappear. So it really pays a lot of dividends to embrace the idea that your whole body and mind work together. The way you perceive the world plays a role in how you move, how you coordinate your body. So my invitation to your listeners is that they embrace the idea that you can't really separate body and mind, and you cannot really work on things physically. You work them on a psychophysical manner, and that's my conviction as far as the abstract aspect of the
Right. And
technique.
Alexander, the man you mentioned there, F. Matthias Alexander, is developer of this work. He came to that understanding that mind body are really two aspects of the same things in a situation where he was working on a practical problem of his own, which was a vocal issue, and it was certainly not something he ever anticipated. He was
That's
not
correct.
it really it was quite a shock to him when he discovered the limitations of not taking that approach. I mean,
That's right.
he was not a philosopher by inclination, and when he came up with that understanding, basically in the late 19th century, 1890s, that was pretty far out thinking in the West, at least.
That's right. It
People
was revolutionary.
didn't talk about mind-body integration in Australia in the
Mm.
1890s, and
That's
so
correct.
he. So while you, as you correctly pointed out, that's a kind of the intellectual underpinning of the Alexander technique. It came about through very practical set of experiments that he performed that
That's correct.
forced him into that understanding in a way. He went he didn't I have a sense that he didn't go all that gracefully there. I mean, I think he probably fought that for a while. But
I'm sure.
anyway, I mean, we don't know. But anyway, so I'd like to as we end here, mention that my guest Pedro de Alcantara has written yet another book called Integrated Practice, Coordination, Rhythm, and Sound. And that book is coming out early in 2011, and this podcast will probably be aired around that time. And Pedro, could you just say a word or two about that book and what you're attempting to do in that book?
Sure. I will go back to my first book, which is Indirect Procedures, A Musician's Guide to the Alexander Technique. I published that in 1997, 13 years ago. And the book was well received by musicians and Alexander teachers. And I got to travel all over the world and I met a lot of really good musicians from whom I learned a lot. And everything that I learned over those years, I put in this new book, which stays true to the spirit of the Alexander Technique. But it takes a kind of a new path, and it says that in music itself, you have the problem and the solution. If a musician is hurting making music to some degree, it's because music is hurtful or the approach to music is hurtful. But I think you can take a little step back and think about music a little bit differently, structure it differently in your thinking and your ears, and then in your technique. And by doing so, music becomes the source of healing rather than the source of pain. And my book tries to make a case for that and invites the reader to use the rhythmic structure of language and the sort of the phenomenon of resonance, which essentially means that you get a lot of sound with a very little amount of muscular effort if you let resonance do the work for you. So that by making music in this new and different way, where you enter music from within and you let resonance do the work for you, you free yourself from muscular effort, from struggle, and you heal yourself through music making, just as you hurt yourself through music making. So that's the philosophy of the new book. And it's going to be, together with my first book, it's going to be the foundation stone of a series of books that I'm writing for the Oxford University Press in this series called The Integrated Musician. After this book, Integrated Practice, comes out, there'll be books for string players, for keyboard players, for singers, for wind players. I will be writing a few of these books, and colleagues of mine, Alexander teachers, will be writing the other books in the series.
Excellent. Well, I think on that note, I want to thank you for being on the show today, Pedro. My guest has been Pedro de Alcantara, an Alexander Technique teacher based in Paris, but works regularly in the States, particularly in New York, and travels around the world teaching. And if anything that we've said during this interview has grabbed your attention, and certainly if you live in Paris, contact Pedro through his website. And if you live somewhere else, find a local teacher, have a few lessons, and I think the things that we've been talking about will become much more concrete to you. Pedro, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Robert.